welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. We have Craig Burley and Chaka Hislop here in the studio with me, Kay Murray, and reports are coming in that Julian Nagelsmann has been sacked from his role at Bayern Munich, with Thomas Tuchel set to be the replacement. Joining us to talk more about this, we have Jan Agafyortov and Archie Rintus, who thought he may have had a night out tonight. He's been called in to cover to tell us more about this one. Blame Bayern, don't blame us, Archie. What's going on?
Well, Kay, I was in Munich earlier today, and I was there to do an interview ahead of Bayern against Dortmund in just over a week's time for us with Thomas Müller. And I'll be honest, it was quiet. As I now know, it was too quiet, because what's happened is that Julian Nagelsmann, who himself wasn't there today, he was off skiing, Bayern were plotting, if that's the right word, his downfall. They gave him a five-year contract just under 2 years ago when he joined the club. This is very much a bolt from the blue in terms of them taking this decision now. But throughout this season, there have always been rumblings of Julian Nagelsmann being under pressure. There's always been that backing music to anything that's been going on. Whenever there's been the slightest downturn in performances, then the noise has been turned up just that little bit more. So in some ways, the timing of it is incredibly surprising, because Bayern are only a point off the top of the Bundesliga in the quarterfinals of the Champions League against Manchester City. And I thought that he would be getting at least until the end of the season, and it would depend on how he did against Manchester City. But they're giving him the heave-ho, and in comes Thomas Tuchel, who was touted as Bayern coach once before, but it was said that Uli Hoeneß, the then president, wasn't a fan of him coming in. Karl-Heinz Rummenigge was. Neither of them are there now, but I think they're looking at what Chelsea did, for example, in getting him in midway through a season in a Champions League campaign and winning the competition, and hoping for an instant impact from Thomas Tuchel.
So why now, Jan?
I think there's a lot to do with the position of Thomas Tuchel. There have been rumours lately in Munich that something going to happen. We now understand that they've been talking to Thomas Tuchel. Thomas Tuchel has moved to the Munich region. And you can see there are two jobs coming up now, maybe. It's a Tottenham job that Tuchel has been linked to. There's a Real Madrid job that he's been linked to. And as Archie said, he was very close to becoming a manager at Bayern 5 years ago. Then they lost out on him. He went to PSG. So I don't think that Bayern Munich took the chance. What is funny, or I don't know how we could call it, they, not only did they sign him 21 months ago, they signed him for 20 million euro. And yes, the game against Leverkusen was terrible, except the last 10 minutes. They were not in that game. But we have talked on this show before that sometimes managers at Bayern, he went straight into Manuel Neuer. And I was speculating on this show, what happening if he gets under pressure? Who will he lean to? Can he go to the experienced player? No, they will stay with Manuel Neuer. And when crises like this happen in Bayern, they just go for it. That is a culture at that club doing it, and I'm with Archie. Uli Hoeneß, Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, they're all into this together now because they're so afraid to miss out on Thomas Tuchel. And another thing, the two key games coming up for them now, the next league game is the Klassiker, is against Dortmund, the former club of Thomas Tuchel, and then they're playing City in the Champions League. That will be the season of Bayern. And they don't think that Nagelsmann, at this time, is the right man to take them into those games.
Manuel Neuer hasn't helped him go and get himself injured in skiing, and he has to go and get Jan Sommer. I thought, had they gone out against City, that could have been it. But I totally agree with Jan. I think, A, they're not convinced with Nagelsmann, and B, they don't want to sit back and wait and Tuchel going somewhere else. So they've made a decision. As harsh as it may seem, they clearly are not convinced that Nagelsmann is the man to take them forward, even though he's got this reputation as a great tactician. They have a very successful and experienced manager out there who other clubs would take in Thomas Tuchel. So they've decided to go and do it now. And actually, on the face of it, I think that's quite a smart move to get Thomas Tuchel in because he's got a proven track record.
Do you like the move, Jan, if it is Thomas Tuchel?
I love Thomas Tuchel, you know that. No, but I've always been defending Thomas Tuchel because I think that what happened in Dortmund, I was in front row with my popcorn and Coke when that soap happened in Dortmund. And I always felt that this thing about Thomas Tuchel being a difficult manager, he is as difficult as anybody else. He did a great job in Paris. You must say he's the only one who made that circus into a team. They went to the Champions League final. He has a proven record at Chelsea, as Craig was saying. And I'm a big fan of Thomas Tuchel. And I don't think... Look at Tottenham, for example, now. If they're going to end the contract now with Conte, where will they go? Should they go back to Pochettino and so on and so on? Which managers are there to pick? This is not like you go somewhere to an agent and say, find me a coach. These clubs, they feel there are 5-6 managers they could get. And when one is available, he is a German, he is living with a proven record, he's living in Munich area, that was too tempting for them. And I don't think they are too convinced that Julian Nagelsmann had grown into that kind of manager they wanted. Yes, it's easy now to say that he's too young, but I will say that Bayern Munich has now again experienced that they need a very, very experienced coach. Mind you, the biggest success there was Ottmar Hitzfeld, Jupp Heynckes, and they were over 60.
That's some pressure, though, for Thomas Tuchel. If he's coming in, being expected to win the Clásico, being expected to get past Manchester City in the Champions League, what happens if they lose the league title and they don't get through in the Champions League under Thomas Tuchel?
I think if you bring Thomas Tuchel in, you're thinking further than the next two games, as much as he's being brought in to get yourself at least in a decent position for a run at the Bundesliga and to get through over two legs against City. If you bring in Thomas Tuchel in, it is with more of a long-term view than that and how you continue to shape this team to compete at the highest level. I think Jan is absolutely right. If you're Bayern Munich and you're sitting down trying to decide who succeeds Julian Nagelsmann, you look at who the likely contenders are, which coaches out there have the kind of record and reputation that you need to succeed and command a dressing room such as Bayern Munich's and lead it to success, has that history of success, and there aren't too many names. I mean, you talk about Spurs maybe losing their manager soon. I'm not sure Antonio Conte is someone that Bayern Munich goes for. Real Madrid, they've tried Ancelotti already. Who else is there? Pochettino? Do you wait on Klopp to see what Liverpool decide to do? Tuchel's available, and given the merry-go-round that you're probably expecting this summer, I think Bayern have done probably the only thing they can in securing Thomas Tuchel's signature this early, because now I can guarantee you there are quite a few clubs going back to the drawing board.
It's a huge blow for Nagelsmann, though, isn't it? I mean, that goes without saying, but here we have a guy who was this young... Still is, and he'll recover, but it's a big blow to his stock. This guy who was brilliant tactician, great young manager, arguably the best up and coming manager in Europe, and basically he goes into Bayern and they just swat him away as, you know, not up to the task, basically. Even though they won the league last year, they're clearly just worried about him. So that's a huge blow for him. But he's young enough. It's, as somebody said, the only sure thing you know as a manager, you're going to get the sack sometime. So he's going to have to deal with it. But yeah, the timing's a little bit of a surprise today. There has been rumours and stuff. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what he's going to do. Now, I suppose the simple thing is you just go to Tottenham if you're Nagelsmann. But I think looking at it, he might want to take some time out. This is going to be a bitter one for him to have to swallow.
I think he'd be all right. I think his record is such that somebody takes a chance. And Bayern Munich is a big job, very little room for any kind of manoeuvre. But to your point, I think Nagelsmann gets another job in the Bundesliga quite easily. I think outside of that top tier of European clubs, anybody would be happy to have Nagelsmann. You mentioned Spurs. I mean, how attractive a proposition
would that be? Well, I'm just, you know, coming from RB Leipzig, it's more of a, you know, less about the big stars. Well, maybe a little bit more about the manager. Kind of similar scenario, you know, RB Leipzig are on the fringes, you know, Tottenham are on the fringes. I'm only just throwing that out there because obviously everybody's talking about Tottenham. I have no idea where he'll go, whether he wants to rest, whether he wants to stay in Germany. Go on, Archie.
I think that Nagelsmann would walk into the Tottenham job.
Yeah.
Just walk in. I know for a fact from someone who was close to Nagelsmann that he actually had an affinity for them at one point. Not a fan, but like thought of them as a good club. That was around the time actually before he then joined Bayern Munich. I think that he's been unfortunate here in that Bayern Munich is a weird club. It's unique. And I think that we need to take into account the whole personality element of it with Thomas Tuchel as well, because I think that personality is part of the reason why Julian Nagelsmann is being sacked here, because they didn't get on with him, because he was seen as being this flashy star coach where instead of the players are being lifted up to be the stars, he was a star alongside them. And I don't think that that was a quality that had necessarily happened in quite the same way before with a Carlo Ancelotti, who still would put the emphasis on my players come first. And indeed, Pep Guardiola, who had the Champions League trophies to go alongside it when he was at Bayern Munich, and Julian Nagelsmann didn't have that. I think he's been quite unfortunate here to not get the chance of at least having the Manchester City games. But I think that it's to do as well with Bayern being quite conservative, or more conservative than they would like to think, in terms of seeing themselves appointing a progressive coach like Julian Nagelsmann. I mean, progressive in terms of his image as well, because these things matter to them as well. So it's a big, big gamble. And when we think about the future of Bayern Munich as well, Thomas Müller has a year to go on his contract, and there were signs already that in the last few weeks that he was being demoted at least, and his form's not been all that this season as well. So I think that this is in some ways a missed opportunity for Bayern to clear out some of the more senior players, because that's what I think Nagelsmann was going to do. And I don't think that the dressing room was exactly united against him either. I think that there was still some support for him in there. And without Julian Nagelsmann, I don't think we see the development that we've seen in somebody like Jamal Musiala. So many moving parts with this, and drowning in narrative ahead of Bayern Dortmund now as well. What with Thomas Tuchel's return, he will get whistled to hell. And plus, Tuchel against Guardiola, a replay of that Champions League final in the Champions League to come. Oh, I'm quite excited for it.
Well, has that factored into it, Jan, the whole Tuchel against Guardiola, to help out with the timing now?
I think that will help. I think absolutely that they don't think that Nagelsmann will take them in there. But just to add to what Archie said, I think this is also a big blow to Bayern Munich and a new management. For remember, this is Salihamidzic and Oliver Kahn is kind of the new duo. They're new kids on the block in terms of responsibility. They took over from the two Muppets that have been sitting on the balcony now for like 30 years, Karl-Heinz Rummenigge and Uli Hoeneß. So this was a start for them. They wanted a young, fresh manager. And I think that what Archie is saying, the idea was that Julian Nagelsmann was supposed to do this generation kind of change. They were building on a Musiala, a Davis and Tell coming in from France. The problem is, when Nagelsmann, if you don't have the credibility, if you don't have the natural authority to do those kind of moves, you're gone. So I think that this is also a big blow to Salihamidzic on Kane. To Kahn. There's so many Kane and Mané on Sané on this team. So I think this is a big blow for them, because Kahn wants to seem as a new modern CEO of Bayern. And now we will end up with Thomas Tuchel. I'm not saying he's old or something, but this is the one they wanted in 2018. So this is a big back to the future for them. And I just think they now learned the hard way to be a Bayern manager. That is nothing for someone who doesn't have the experience. If you're going to take out Thomas Müller, I mean, you have to take on whole Bayern. You have to take on all Munich. You have to take on all Germany. Would Julian Nagelsmann do that? I doubt it.
I just wonder, Archie, is this a Salihamidzic and Oliver Kahn straight up decision, or do you think that they've canvassed the players at all in this, or they've just gone out on a limb and made this decision on their own?
I think they've canvassed some players on this. I think that Salihamidžić might be thinking, for example, as well, João Cancelo, a player that he brought in from Manchester City during January, has been already not been up to what Julian Nagelsmann wanted from him. And I think that that's probably raised an eyebrow from Salihamidžić, and he's thinking, well, he's not making me look great here when I've gone and got this world-class fullback and he's not playing him, or he's saying that he can't fit into a back three. I think that, yeah, it's funny thinking back to a line in the interview that I had today with Thomas Müller, where he said kind of pointedly, I do whatever the coach, Julian Nagelsmann, says. And now I'm thinking, did he know? Did he know already? Was he saying the coach and then really concentrating very hard? The coach, Julian Nagelsmann. I think he probably might have, you know. So I think that, yeah, this is undoubtedly that there's always this talk of we are who we are, mia san mia, at Bayern. And the thing is, Julian Nagelsmann was meant to fit into that. He was a boyhood fan of the club. This was his dream job. He will be absolutely heartbroken by this. I'd also go back to a story in the summer where his private life got thrown in to the press when Julian Nagelsmann was starting to date somebody who worked for a major newspaper in Germany. And I think that image-wise, that didn't go down very well at the club either. And the results and the performances have put him on thin ice. I think we have to go all the way back to the quarterfinal against Villarreal and the way that Bayern got knocked out. And I think that it's still probably the lingering hangover of that, not winning the DFB Cup last season as well. And at Bayern Munich, that's not good enough, apparently.
Well, let's take a look at the odds, shall we, for this quarterfinal meeting between Bayern and Man City. Does it change the way you feel about how this game's going to turn out, Jan, now that Thomas Tuchel could be the manager of Bayern?
Yeah, first I have to say that the way they played against PSG was very impressive. I mean, the game in Paris, they were excellent. They were excellent tactically. Their pressure was brilliant. But yes, I think that Manchester City will think that Bayern Munich will be better because they will have that final. I was at that final. I remember Thomas Tuchel had Pep Guardiola in his pocket from the day before. He was so calm in training. He was everything. And I'm not sure if I was on or something, but I said it was clear, this is going to be a Chelsea win, because Guardiola was totally opposite. He was all about the details. And Thomas Tuchel loves it. He knows this. But, well, is it 8 Champions League games, 8 wins for Nagelsmann? You can't do it better in the Champions League. So it's going to be quite interesting.
Who's going through?
Well, it doesn't change for me in a sense that City have to remedy the errors at the back when they're dominating games. That has cost them the knockout stages in every year that he's been there. That's factual. The final was not so much, I don't think it was so much Thomas Tuchel and Chelsea. Well, maybe it was him getting in his mind, but it was team selection. He's not going to go at this Bayern Munich game and not play a holding midfielder, which he did in the Champions League final. So if City can remedy those errors that they make at the back, I still think they're going to be strong enough to go through. But that's a big question mark, because every year in this competition, be it a quarter-final, a semi-final or a final, they have made those errors and they've yet to get over that line. So for me, it's down to what they do. Yeah, Bayern are a good side and they will cause them problems. But City are strong and that boy is scoring goals up front for fun. So they're in a good position.
Saka?
I'll say, as I've always said, I think City have the better team. If it's down to the players, City win it. If it comes down to the managers, and I think Thomas Tuchel coming in kind of adds to that for all the reasons that Jan just pointed out with that final. I think that also now plays even more into turning up some of the pressure on Pep Guardiola to get it right, in just letting his players play their natural games. Don't get into the details as Jan spoke about. Let this team play. As long as he does that, as long as it comes down to Le Monde Park, I think City win it.
The interesting thing as well will be the style that Thomas Tuchel brings. PSG was slightly different. Chelsea, it was success, obviously. But even though the Chelsea fans sort of chant his name and seem to have some sort of love in with him, and that's fair enough, I think people are quick to forget some of the football was quite pedestrian towards the end and even during his spell. A little bit slow, a little bit ponderous, a little bit side to side, and I think some people tend to forget that. Oh, it was the Champions League final. Oh, we got to the final of the Carabao Cup or the FA Cup, whatever it was. But some of the football actually at Chelsea was a little slow. And I don't think Bayern Munich and their supporters will settle for something like that. So it's going to be interesting to watch just how he integrates this Bayern Munich squad into what he wants. And let's be frank about it. It's a good squad of players. I mean, the bench for the Champions League game was scary. That PSG game in Munich, you looked at the Bayern bench, you went, look, goodness me. Some really, starting players, Mane, Sané, Gnabry. So he's got a good squad to work with. Let's see what he does.
Yeah, we can't wait to see that interview as well with Thomas Muller now that Archie did. We'll be picking that apart as well. I guess the moral of the story is if you're on a buying contract, do not go skiing because everything goes wrong. That's what seems to happen. Anyway, thank you so much to Jan and Archie for being with us.
Pleasure.
We'll be speaking to them again soon. Make sure to always catch us here on ESPN FC every single day as we react to all the day's news in football. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Qualifying for Euro 2024 kicked off today. And oh, look at that. It's the finalists from 2020. Italy and England playing it out this time. It went in England's favour. Declan Rice opened the scoring. Harry Kane became England's new all-time top scorer with a second goal there for England. Retegi on his debut scoring for Italy. And there was a red card for Luke Shaw as well. Craig, what did you make of this game today?
Do you want a cliche?
Yes.
I know exactly what's coming.
It was the proverbial game of two halves. I thought England were very good in the first half, controlled it, and then lost composure as Italy got on the front foot. And Italy in the second half pressed higher up, won the ball back higher up, started passing it better, got better width in the game. And England struggled, and we had a ref who was a little bit card happy. It seemed that every time an England player tried to slow the throw-in down, even by a few seconds, he was booking him. It cost Luke Shaw in the end. I'm not saying it was wrong, but I'm saying it was sort of out of the ordinary, the referee, but he seemed to have made his mind up, and England should have dealt with that better. And in the end, they were hanging on, as I say, once Shaw gets sent off, but a really, really good result going away to Italy, where it has been proven very difficult to go there and win. And yeah, a great start for Gareth Southgate's men. But I don't think Mancini will be happy with the first half at all.
Gab Marcotti and Stuart Robson are with us as well. Stuart, what were your thoughts on what we saw from England?
Well, in the first half, England played very well, and the key player to it was Jude Bellingham, because he was playing on Jorginho and he played much higher up the field. They had Phillips and Declan Rice as the holding players. And every time the ball broke, it looked as though Bellingham was going to run away from Jorginho. And then he was able to then pick out the wide players. He was able to pick out the centre forward. And Harry Kane, likewise, when the ball was played up to him, he got turned very easily. But it was made easy for England by the way Italy played in that first half. The midfield players weren't sure whether to press or whether to drop. And it gave England domination of that midfield area. And once you get domination of the midfield area, you're always going to be in control of the game. And that was the case in the first half. It all changed in the second half, mind you.
Gab, from the Italy perspective?
Well, I can tell you what Mancini said. And Mancini said, I agree with Craig Burley. Well, not quite, but he did say exactly what Craig said. I think in that first half, England could have maybe scored. If England had scored 4 or 5, it would not have been scandalous in the first half. Italy much better after the break. And there's obviously a disparity in talent, 1-11, especially in certain areas between these two teams. But Italy can't afford to give away half a game. I think they have to play for 90 minutes the way they did in the second half if they're going to want to be able to compete against the bigger teams. And by the same token, I thought England too conservative in the second half. It wasn't just Italy playing better. It was kind of old Southgate. Ooh, let me see. Yeah, I get a point here. It's not so bad, but I don't want to, and then everything goes, he takes off Foden and they give up trying to control the midfield and they pay a price for it.
Harry Kane, England's all-time top scorer in the men's game right now. Where does he stand among strikers of years gone by for England?
Well, I think clearly his record suggests he's top of the tree I'm not sure you can argue too much with that. I mean, it just comes down to difference. But certainly in style, I look at Wayne Rooney second on that list. Wayne was more aggressive, more aggressive type striker. But in terms of pure goals, you liken him to Lineker or Greaves. I mean, that record speaks for itself. I mean, Harry Kane certainly has been everything that England needed him to be.
Robbo?
Harry Kane's been brilliant and he's got to be right up there. And it's not just the goals. Yes, that's what we're talking about, his record with the goals. But it's the way he plays as well, the way he's linking up the game, the way he's allowing other players to run beyond him. I thought he was key again tonight. Yes, he got the ball taken off him a few times in the second half. In the first half, his link-up play was excellent. He can see a pass and he's scoring goals. And he's been an outstanding player for England and Tottenham over the last 8 years or so.
He's very clever at drawing fouls, particularly when you need to ease the pressure, as England did in the second half. As Robbo mentioned, we all know about his passing range, how he drops deep. There's very, very few, if any, current players do that. Benzema does it a little bit, probably more than Lewandowski if we're looking at the top strikers. But none of them have the passing range. Benzema's a good passer of the ball, but Kane is an exceptional passer of the ball long range. That's unusual for a guy who's prolific as a goal scorer. And so there is no getting away. This guy has been immense for England, for Tottenham. And it's one of the things that stirs the debate up about why and is he going to make this big move? As Tottenham sort of scuttle around and they look for potentially a new manager and, what's going to lie ahead for them. The question remains for Harry Kane. But for Gareth Southgate, he knows exactly what he's getting. He's getting a playmaker, he's getting a winner, he's getting a goal scorer. And also, bearing in mind what happened to him against France with a penalty, he's got a player who's more than prepared to have the responsibility of his nation. Away in Italy, big penalty miss in the World Cup against France, steps up, buries it, gets him the 3 points. That's a leader.
Absolutely. Gab, I wonder what the talk is in London of his future as a player for club.
I think it's, we're a little bit back to where we were 2 years ago. I think the main difference now, though, is that, Harry Kane at this stage is going to want to wait to see what Spurs' next move is managerially. Obviously, highly unlikely that Conte sticks around. What sort of commitment does he have? What sort of market does he have in terms of how much, Daniel Levy would expect for him? I do believe Kane feels very, very committed to Spurs. And, he doesn't talk much about it in public, and obviously he tried to engineer a move back then. But, you know, I just wonder in the back of my mind if it's the kind of thing where he said, look, I tried to engineer the move two summers ago. It didn't work. I've committed here. You know, maybe I'll be a one-club man or one-club hero, and I'll write history here. And in some ways, it's going to be worth more than going somewhere else and winning silverware as a passenger on a much bigger budget team.
Obviously, time will tell. Manchester United's been one of the clubs that he could be rumoured to be going to. But there's been a lot of talk about Manchester United's ownership today, Gab. What's the latest?
Well, the latest is that the two bids are in. There was obviously that confusion on Wednesday, which, you know, Rain had put as a supposed deadline. But as we said, deadlines don't really mean anything. This isn't like the Abramovich sale. There's no sort of court-ordered sale of the club going on here. The Glazers can put deadlines and ignore deadlines, and they can ignore bids. They don't have to sell. But they both came in with supposedly improved bids. We know that, you know, one possibility has been mooted is some of the Glazers, led by obviously Joel and Avram, and Avram might buy out some of the other Glazers. There's the Jim Ratcliffe bid, which appears more complicated in the sense that he would only take over the Glazers' share of the club. So I think it's a developing situation. I think what we can be pretty sure of is if the Glazers stick to that $6 billion pound price tag, what, nearly $7 billion, then I think it's going to take more time for the situation to resolve itself, because my understanding is the bids aren't quite that high yet.
What's been the talk of this Finnish businessman coming in and wanting to give a portion of the club to the fans?
Yeah, this kind of came out of the blue a little bit, but he's a former Nokia executive. He's a guy who has some money and has wealthy friends, and he's suggesting a business model where, you know, effectively he would put up, he and his business partners would put up half the money to buy the club. The other half would, boy, he would be looking for the fans to raise it. You know, his point is, well, there's, you know, X many million United fans around the world. If everybody chips in, you know, $3, $5, whatever it is, then, or if they all chip, if there's, what, if there's 100 million and they all chip in $30, let's say, whatever number you want to put in, then, you know, we've raised $3 billion, and that's the other half of the bid. And then we'll have some app or some way in which they can communicate and vote on important club matters. It's not something that's entirely novel, but I think at this scale, it would be, it certainly would be pretty big. I'm not sure if it's on a 50-50 basis. I don't know what sort of people he's going to get to come in on his side and, you know, commit hundreds of millions for sort of the non-fan 50%, because obviously when you put money into the club, you know, and you've got risk capital, you're going to want a return, or you're going to at least want some level of control. But certainly he's gotten a fair amount of publicity out of it.
Let's turn our attentions to everything that's going on at Barcelona and the scandal with the referees. This is Mundo Deportivo just saying, basically a summary of Casa Negreira, all out in the open. UEFA has opened an investigation into these payments. What more can you tell us with the latest updates here, Gab?
So, look, there's obviously different dimensions to the story, obviously, but which is the leading news agency in Spain. So, you know, this isn't a sort of a partisan newspaper. You know, this is like the equivalent of Reuters or the AP. They did some original reporting, and they reported the prosecutor's office hasn't been able to find any solid evidence of that money being used to go and corrupt referees in Spain, which is obviously a big win for Barcelona. At the same time, UEFA are going to have to open an investigation anyway in terms of financial fair play. And there's really two reasons for this, effectively. If they gave $7 million to Negreiro, he would have done something with that money. If Negreiro attempted to influence referees on a European level, then obviously that becomes UEFA's business. And of course, unlike La Liga in Spain, there is no statute of limitations on it. And I think there's also, strictly speaking, an accounting argument to this. They're going to go back to the books and say, hey, you know, this $7 million you gave him, is it all in your accounts legitimately under consulting fees or you know, fees for you to watch videos of referees and give us reports about them, which is the official line. So they're going to go back and dig into that. It's hard to speculate what they'll find or how they'll move, but obviously the relationship between Barcelona and UEFA right now isn't great.
If it is worst case scenario, Gab, in terms of what they do find, what are we looking at for punishment for Barcelona? What might it mean?
Well, if it's purely a financial fair play violation, then you have the usual range of potential punishment, you know, right? Going right up to a ban in an extreme case of false accounting, obstruction of justice, whatever else, to, you know, limitations on spending, to a fine, to exclusion from the Champions League, limitations in the transfer market. But I think it's really premature to speculate about that. If they find other evidence in terms of actual tampering with referees. But again, I should stress, this is pretty far-fetched. They just feel like they need to investigate, right? Why they always let the local authorities investigate first, and then they follow up. But if there was evidence of tampering with referees, then obviously that would be very, very serious, and it would be hard to see them escaping a ban. Personally, and this is just my wild speculation here, I would assume that if the Spanish criminal investigators couldn't find solid evidence about something that happened 5 years ago, I don't see how UEFA are going to be able to do it in terms of actual tampering with referees.
You can hear a lot more from Gab over on the Gab and Jules podcast. We thank him for being with us. There's more talk with Jules about the ownership at Manchester United as well. Download that wherever you get your podcasts.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Group J, round one, Portugal against Liechtenstein, finished 4-0 to the Portuguese. Cristiano Ronaldo broke the record for the most appearances in men's international history, doing so at 38 years old as well. 197 games, scoring two on the day as well. João Cancelo was also on the score sheet in this one, and Bernardo Silva. So Cristiano Ronaldo gets the call up here, scores two goals in this one. Stuart Robson is with us, as is Frank Leboff. Is this the perfect way for Roberto Martinez to say, OK, you've broken the record, Cristiano, you've got your goals, we thank you very much, but it is a new era for us now? Or is he planning to use him in the games that are coming?
Well, I think it could be difficult for Roberto Martinez. I think Ronaldo's a difficult player to drop out the national team, that's for sure. And is Roberto Martinez a strong enough character to do it? He'll obviously want to build his own side, and it's difficult when you've got Ronaldo in your side. So he's got to make a big call. If I was him, I'd say, thanks very much. You've got your record. Great. You've been a magnificent player for the country. You should get a standing ovation, all those sort of things. But I'm going to pick a different squad. I'm not going to have you in my squad. I'm building for the future. I know exactly what I want, how I want to play, and you're not part of it. So that's what I would do if I was Roberto Martinez.
Would you agree with that, Frank?
I do, because it's a time when you just arrived to express what you really want in the future, in the present, but also in the future with the club. And Ronaldo doesn't belong to the future, that's for sure. And everybody knows that. And it's now that you can say, okay, you know, I want something different. I want to achieve something different, and I want to challenge other players with the national teams. So it was nice to see Ronaldo coming back, beating the record, scoring goals. But I think it's time to say goodbye, because Portugal cannot live with the nostalgia, but they have to live with the present time and the future, and for sure with other players.
He struggled at the World Cup. 2 years' time when the Euros is on, he's going to be slower. He's not going to be as sharp. Roberto Martinez has just come off the back of the aforementioned World Cup, shown himself to be a weak international manager. The very fact that he thought Eden Hazard was good enough, fit enough, and playing well enough to play for Belgium was probably one of the reasons that caused the angst and tension that was in the Belgium camp. Not the only reason, but it was probably part of it. Because other players probably sat back and thought, holy smokes, he can't get a game for Real Madrid. He's getting no game time. So the last thing he wants to show here at Portugal is more weak management. And I think the best thing for him to do was, if he was going to get the wrath of some Portuguese fans, get it early and get it out of the way. Make a statement. Ronaldo's had his time. I'm about the future here. This Portugal side is about the future. And we move on. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think he's going to do the same thing that he did with Hazard. He's going to let it linger. And the longer it lingers, the bigger the problem becomes. Because the narrative is always going to be about one player turning up for Portugal. It's not about Bernardo Silva or the rest. One player.
I think there's two certainties here. I think Portugal will be better when they move on from Ronaldo, this version of Cristiano Ronaldo. The other is Roberto Martinez is not the manager to do that. He simply, as Craig pointed to, he simply doesn't have the credit or the credibility to move Ronaldo on. And we've seen Ronaldo's playbook when he's upset at being left out. Turned the media on Erik ten Hag, but thankfully, I think Manchester United's fan base recognised that he wasn't the player that he once was. And certainly once ten Hag was able to turn results around and keep Manchester United playing as well as they have been, Cristiano Ronaldo becomes a very distant memory. For Martins, it's a very different scenario in that you have this player who will be lauded regardless by the Portuguese fan base, who clearly doesn't think he's past it and needs a bigger character to convince him of that. And then when that trigger is pulled, you know he'll turn everybody he can against you. And I don't think Roberto Martinez is able to withstand that kind of pressure. We are talking about a manager who was in charge of Belgium, who was number one in the FIFA rankings for probably, 5 years consecutively, and Belgium still hadn't won anything. Nothing about Roberto Martinez's record suggests that he can stand up to the pressure that Ronaldo definitely will turn up against him. So Ronaldo gets to decide when it's time for him to step away. Nobody else will.
Meanwhile, France and Netherlands will get their qualifying campaign underway tomorrow. Just taking a look at the odds in this one. France coming into it as favourites. But we also did hear from Kylian Mbappe in what was his first press conference as captain of France. Speaking about the whole situation with Antoine Griezmann being upset about the decision, he said, "I spoke with Antoine, he was disappointed and that's understandable. It's an expected reaction. I told him that I would have had the same reaction. He is perhaps the most important player during the Deschamps era. I am not his hierarchical superior and he and I will be hand in hand to try to allow this team to impose itself on a global level. If he has something to say to the group, I'll sit down and listen. You mustn't shut the door to anyone. Everyone is free to express themselves." So, Frank, he says they're going to be hand in hand. Do you believe that?
Hopefully they will, you know, if they have the good result, they will be. You know, the atmosphere will be there, the good atmosphere, and then everybody's going to be happy. But it's crazy that nowadays, you know, players have to be political, diplomatic. I would have been the captain of France, or just named the captain of France. I would have said, you know what, I've been named by the coach. If you want some, you know, explanations, you know, go back to the coach. Don't come to me. I'm happy to be the captain of France. I'm proud to be the captain of France. Don't start, you know, something with Antoine. Antoine is my teammate, and we're going to keep on working on that. But don't try to explain too much that I talked to him, everything is good, we're going to be friends, we're going to work hand in hand. Come on, you know, play football, stop talking. And again, for me, it's not a debate. You play for France, you should be happy to play for France, even if you're not the captain. It's important, but it's not crucial for me.
Are you having a little chuckle there, Stuart?
Yeah, because I agree with Frank entirely. People used to ask me, who was the greatest captain you played under? And all, was it important, the captain? In football, and people disagree with me, captain meant nothing to me. I couldn't care less who was captain. I was a captain of Coventry for 2 years. I couldn't care less. I couldn't care less. Alvin Martin was the captain of West Ham. I couldn't care less whether David O'Leary was the manager of Arsenal. It made no difference to me. You went out and played. The captain in football doesn't really have an influence on the game. It's the coach that has the biggest influence, the manager. The captain's just there to shake hands, flick the coin, and occasionally rally the troops every so often. Everyone talks about Tony Adams being a great captain. I used to chuckle at what he used to say. I used to laugh at what he used to say. It was embarrassing. but there we go. You know, everybody has a different view on it.
The captain leads the team out. If you've got 11 international players, the chances are you've got 11 internationals who understand the game and can organise, or they should be able to, and can voice their opinion and do all the things that people think only a captain does. I don't ever remember ever being asked, or any of my teammates ever been asked, about what they thought about who was captain. Gary McAllister was captain for Scotland for many a year when I was playing. And when Gary was injured, Colin Hendry captained it for in the World Cup and for a few games. It made no difference, as Robbo said. I mean, I don't know why everybody has to make a big deal of this. And if Antoine Griezmann's upset, and I don't know if he is or not, then he needs to just go over it. Because it's part and parcel. A coach makes a decision the same as he makes personnel decisions to play. Then he makes a decision who's going to be captain. Maybe who speaks to the press a little bit more. But really and truly, unless you've got a bunch of big babies in that dressing room, it shouldn't really make a jot of a difference, to be honest, who the captain is or not.
You all played far too good teams. I played with Trinidad and Tobago. I think it made a difference to us. We had Dwight York as our captain, so he did that World Cup run. And I felt him as
that's a big disparity. Well,
yeah, exactly. And that's my point. And that's my point. You know, you look to your captain for leadership when otherwise it might be a little bit hard to come by. And Dwight was an incredible captain for us. But even then, if Dwight wasn't available or he didn't play and somebody else was named captain, it wasn't a big deal. It wasn't a discussion. Or Dwight got the captain's armband off somebody else. Press didn't ask about it. And certainly the players didn't think about it. I think it becomes important when things aren't going well and you want somebody just to step up and show that bit of leadership. Otherwise, it's not an issue to the players, shouldn't be an issue to the press.
It seems to me, though, that people always think, and maybe the French media, which I presume this is where this is coming from.
It's Frank. Frank's
is the reason for it. There is always going to be a problem within the French camp. That's kind of where I'm getting. The feeling I'm getting is that they always think that any decision, Benzema, Giroud, Mbappe's playing time, Mbappe's position, who's the captain? It just always seems to me that people are always looking, because the French, they're not the only ones, but they've had a bit of a history about imploding within their squad, because a lot of big egos in there. It seems to me that people are poking away to see if they can find any little cracks in their latest decision and whether that's going to affect the team, but it shouldn't.
Blame the French is basically what Craig's saying, Frank.
Okay, I'm sorry, but the thing is I remember my time where Didier Deschamps was the captain. We had Laurent Blanc as the vice captain, but we could have had, you know, Zidane, Jörg Kaerf. I've been sometime myself captain. Thuram, Desailly as well. I mean, that was crazy that we never talked, never about the captaincy of Didier Deschamps. It was Jacques' call, and we agreed. But I can tell you, the one who got the most criticism on the field during the games was Didier Deschamps. Everybody was shouting at him. And I heard some people saying, shut up, you know, when he was saying something. So it wasn't about his talent or what. It was about his camaraderie, how he was dealing with the players. But he wasn't superior to anybody else. Never. The ego, Craig was talking about the ego. We had the biggest team with the biggest ego, I can tell you. But we dealt with that and we accepted the ego of the others. And we didn't care who was the captain. We are all captains. That's the main problem that they have right now. They have two young players, or they have young players, talented players, but who's the leader? You know, Griezmann, we had bad time for 2 years, and Mbappe, who has been being criticized with Paris Saint-Germain, that's the two guys fighting for the captaincy. So it tells you how misleading is that team.
You can always tell it's International Week, can't you?
Yeah.
We've just ripped the backside out of that for a good 10 minutes.
Agrees with 32.
Absolutely. So we'll pull that to shreds for
Frank
10 minutes.
Frank is showing his age now. But if you'd like to hear more from our egos, then you can head on over to our
no
YouTube
egos
page
in this show.
And subscribe. ESPN FC.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's that time of the week.
Oh!
Talking about... Sorry.
No, carry on. What were you about to say?
Don't be doing a full 360.
No, I certainly won't. Not a lot to change. Buy and drop. They were top last week.
A lot of change.
Well, I won't say. Buy and drop significantly because they lost on the weekend. Everybody moves up as a result. Barcelona get a big jump after beating Real Madrid. Manchester United are in, despite not playing fantastically well. Atletico score 3 again, and all of a sudden Atletico looking like anybody but Atletico. So they're back in, but a lot of the usual faces at this time of the week.
You're being nice to Napoli again.
They deserve to be top.
You didn't put them there last week.
They'd lost a couple of weeks ago, and they've won since.
You had to go back a few weeks.
They'd lost a couple of weeks ago, and then they had to wait for Bayern Munich to falter. Bayern faltered. Napoli are back. That's all.
I can paraphrase the not a lot of new faces means not a lot of thought has gone into it.
It was the algorithm.
You can't blame science. That's what it is, Craig. It's science.
It's an art.
Robbo, any science. Problems with Shaka's power rankings?
No, none at all.
Now, I've got to say, I always agree with Shaka. And who is that handsome chap in the background with his bow tie on? That's a magnificent photo of Shaka. Oh, Shaka, you look $1 million there.
He doesn't.
That was Monday. That was when I was on the show Monday.
You should dress up like that.
No, I fully agree with Shaka. Shaka's done a good job. Shaka's done a good job with those power rankings.
Oh, Frank's not happy. There's no French clubs.
No complaint whatsoever with Shaka power ranking. I think I'm happy to see Napoli first, you know, because I think they really deserve. And I'm with Robbo. You know, we have the picture on the backside, you know, of the new James Bond, you know. And that's absolutely fantastic.
I'll tell you what I'm going to do. It's such a shallow life I lead. When this pops up in our YouTube channel, or should I say, how does Dan say it? YouTube. How does he say it?
I have no idea.
Well, he butchers it anyway. When this pops up in the YouTube channel, I'm going to go and leave a comment.
All right. Oh. Let me know where the comment is, because I won't see it.
Huh?
Let me know where the comment is,
because I won't see it. Such is the life I'm leading. Very positive.
As you always are, Craig.
Go and find
I wouldn't
Craig
expect anything
in the comments
else.
Section, maybe over on Extra Time, which is also available on YouTube. These guys are all available on the latest edition of Extra Time. That would be Stuart, Frank, Craig and Checker. And you might even find Craig commenting there. CONCACAF Nations League, Suriname against Mexico. That game taking place tonight, 8 Eastern. And right after it, Football Americas to react to everything that they've seen. So be sure to catch the guys on ESPN Plus reacting to Mexico's performance.
See you back at work yet? As he's still changing diapers.
Here's a look at the Bundesliga standings right now. Bayern Munich second. Just a point behind Borussia Dortmund, who, by the way, they will be facing as soon as the action returns. It is the Clásica. Meanwhile, in Chile, this is Leandro Requena.
Oh, goodness me.
A goalkeeper goal from a goal kick.
Can he score direct from a goal kick? I guess that's one for the rules of offense, Craig.
Wasn't a goal kick, I can't see, was it? Anyway,
can he score direct from a goal kick? Did anybody touch it?
Seems to be that you can there.
Well, you can in Chile.
Listen, if there's a goalkeeper involved, every rule applies.
Just blame Jack.
Score from anything.
That's always the best way. Extra time.
So no, I have to blame. I have to blame you.
Not to blame. Head of the goalkeeper's union. Stick around. These guys are answering questions on Extra Time. Frank and Robbo too. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Frank LeBoeuf, Stuart Robson, Craig Burley and Chaka Hislop are here. Let's get to the questions. I'll start with you, Robbo. Amazing Eagle says, what are the three Lions' chances of winning Euro 2024?
I think they're quite good. I wouldn't say they were favourites, but they're probably being the top three, I would say. They've got off to a good start against Italy, so I think they're going to qualify. There's not too many difficult games in their group. They've got to play Italy at home, but I don't think Italy are a particularly good side at the moment. It's up to Gareth Southgate whether he can get his tactics right in the big games when they get to the finals, because England have some exceptional players. I think they've got one of the best midfield players in the world, or who will be one of the best midfield players in the world, in Jude Bellingham. Declan Rice is a good player. They've got a good goal scorer in Harry Kane. Saka's decent on the wing. They've been okay defensively. So I think they can go a long way. They're in the top two or three. They can certainly win it.
Robbo, if I give you a choice when fit, Jordan Pickford or Nick Pope?
In terms of goalkeeping, which I suppose that's the main thing you talk about, goalkeeping, I would say Nick Pope. If you're talking about ability with the ball at his feet, you probably would go for Pickford. And that's, I think, why Gareth Southgate goes to Pickford, because he wants somebody that's more comfortable on the ball. And I've seen Nick Pope for Newcastle. He looks a bit gangly and he doesn't look as though he's got a left foot. And if he played on his left foot, he struggles somewhat. But as a goalkeeper, I would say Nick Pope.
Yeah, I like him.
Next question.
Nick Pope is very good, you know, with diving headers, you know. He proved it.
Yes.
If any one of you played under Sir Alex Ferguson, how would you feel about the hairdryer treatment?
How would you feel?
Yeah. You'd obviously know you've done something wrong.
I don't think you have much of a choice. You take, it's Sir Alex Ferguson, you take the hairdryer treatment.
Is it a badge of honour to get the hairdryer treatment?
No, it's not.
Alex Ferguson?
I'm sure we've all been on the wrong end of tellings off from managers in different ways. It's never fun. It's part of the game. But obviously Sir Alex hairdryer is a little bit more infamous than others.
I could have joined the... When we lost the FA Cup final in 94 to Man United, I saw him walking in to the media room or wherever it was, and he said to me, "Aye, you joined the wrong club, son." So I could have got it.
That's a nice compliment, though, isn't it, to be getting off Sir Alex Ferguson as well?
Where did he want you to go? Aberdeen?
That was when I was a youngster, Rob. What's wrong with Aberdeen?
well, they were the European Cup Winners' Cup finalists.
Beat Real Madrid.
I'm telling Derek Ray of you, Robbo.
What a tackle from behind from Robbo. That's a tackle from behind.
That's a red card.
He was picking on me the other day. Inspector Clouseau over here. Sherlock Holmes, but he's listening to everything you say. I never do that.
Can you all stop picking on Craig Burley, please?
Stop picking on me. Not I feel fair. It's like not right.
No, well, really sometimes the bullies have to bully bully the bully, don't they?
Right. With Nagelsmann being sacked, should Spurs try to sign him?
Yes.
Actually, we're in touch, seem to think so.
Yeah, I think it's a great fit. Absolutely.
Yeah, younger manager who has worked with budget limitations before at Leipzig. Did a good job, really good job, and Hoffenheim. And Spurs need somebody that's going to be prepared to come in there, work within the constraints, make players better, play a nice style of football, which we've all talked about, Conte has not, and be prepared to be in there for at least 3 to 5 years. That's what they need. They've never needed somebody to come in who's harum scarum, you know, wants to fight the world and will be gone in 15 months or whatever it is. So, in the face of it, it all sounds a perfect fit, which probably means Tottenham are going to go for Mauricio Pochettino or somebody else.
You know, we've got a producer on tonight who's a big Spurs fan, so obviously he wants
very
to
very quiet
know.
Tonight.
No, he wants to know what Robbo's got to think of this.
Nagelsmann, I was listening to your piece when you were talking about why he got the sack. I think the people in Germany missed the point. When he was at the beginning of this season, he was under pressure because he was the person that allowed Lewandowski to go. He was almost pushing Lewandowski out the door because he wanted to have his own team. That's what he was saying. I want my own team now. I can play my own football. Last year, it was somebody else's team. Now I've got my team. I've got my ideas. And unfortunately for him, his ideas didn't come across in the right way and they didn't get the performances that they were looking for. But is he a good fit for Spurs? I would say absolutely. I think he can do a very good job for Spurs. And as Craig said, they need somebody for the long term who's going to get a good relationship with the players, be good tactically and get the crowd behind them because the crowd weren't happy with Conte's style of football in the last year or so.
Oh, can you imagine the producer would be up there? He'd be in the gallery now, lying on his back with his legs in the air, waggling them around, going, oh!
No, because he'll get rid of Kane. He'll get rid of the top striker, Nagelsmann. He won't be happy with that. He'll want all the young ones in. Do you remember, Craig, was it you, Shaka, who picked out the other day that when we saw the Lewandowski interview on the Bicycle Diaries, he listed all the managers he played under and he missed out Nagelsmann,
not taking the credit.
He? But it was you, right?
Shaka wasn't here. Because
he only did a half day, didn't he?
No, a quarter. He did the Man United game. But he did, he rattled off all the great managers on when he was doing the Bicycle Diaries with Martin Einstein and missed out Nagelsmann. And I thought, well, maybe he just missed him out because his name didn't come, but maybe there was something a bit deeper. Or are we just looking for something?
No, not we, you.
Like we usually do.
It was a good point, though. Okay.
What was a good point? I made it.
Shaka, why do goalkeepers like drinking water once they concede a goal?
You've got to do something. You have to do something. That's in trouble. A goal goes in, you know the camera's on you.
To be fair, Shaka, at least you were well hydrated.
Oh, right, yes. I did drink a lot of water by day. I did.
Maybe it's not water.
The camera's
maybe
on you.
Maybe
you're feeling all awkward. You just got to do something. Just drink water is as easy as it gets.
Was you one to berate?
Never did.
Oh, can you imagine the reaction? If Barthez started having a go at Frank, can you imagine Frank's reaction? You think he'd just stand there and say, oh, yeah, you're absolutely right, Fabian. You know,
you wouldn't know the difference, Robbo. You think they're having...
The Spider-Man meme.
Or the DiCaprio one when he's pointing at the TV.
Well, they're actually the same person. Amazing.
Frank, what did you think when your goalkeeper would have a little sip of water behind I definitely.
Well, you know, I thought maybe it wasn't water. Maybe they want to forget their mistakes, so they drink something else.
you're right. That's what it should have been. Should have been something stronger.
Guys, which current Premier League coach is currently in the most danger of being sacked? Maybe there are several who should start quietly packing their bags.
So that have changed the manager.
Brendan Rodgers for me.
Yeah.
David Moyes can't be far away. Mm-hmm. Who else is down there? Leeds have changed the manager, so that's not going to happen. Palace have changed. Who have we missed, Jack?
Have Wolves changed?
Bournemouth.
Wolves and Aston Villa have changed
Gary
their managers.
Neal came in, they changed, but...
But they changed early in the season.
Yeah.
So you guys are saying Brendan Rodgers?
Rodgers and Moyes.
I agree with Frank. Brendan Rodgers is under a lot of pressure. Frank said it.
Mm. Yeah.
Can't defend.
Yeah, I agree with that. Because I think it's Leicester fans and the club were expecting something different this season. It's been a bad season because of a bad start. But you can see that they cannot achieve something, you know, too many times and be, confident enough to keep on winning games, and you see some doubts and everything. So maybe something is not open between the players and Brendan Rodgers. Maybe some of them don't understand what he really, really wants. So I think that's almost
Leicester lost a lot of good talent in the summer, and you can't really say that for West Ham though. But to that point, West Ham have been overachieving for the last couple of seasons. This season being the first significant dip for David Moyes, and I just wonder if that's given him enough equity. But West Ham haven't really lost in terms of talent in the way that Leicester have.
Right. I feel like you usually say nice things about Brendan Rodgers, but are you agreeing with the guys here?
I say nice things about everybody.
Oh, goodness me. I've heard it all now. I have heard it all today.
I feel like you're offering Brendan Rodgers' favour as a manager.
I need a sip of water after
Brendan
that.
Brendan Rodgers has proven himself to be a more than decent coach. I'd like to try and finish this segment.
There's one question after this. We can move on if you want.
No, I meant like... I do. Shaq is right. You know, Wesley Fofana, Chilwell,
Schmeichel.
There's been more. I just can't, off the top of my head, remember all the players that they've lost. And the recruitment was non-existent in the summer. That being said, I was still expecting them to be at worst mid-table. But defensively, Wout Vaz, whatever you pronounce it, and that back four, and the goalkeeper, Ward, not a patch on Schmeichel. So, I do agree, under pressure, but it's amazing. 18 months ago, people were talking about him replacing Arteta if he got sacked when Arteta was struggling. Now look where Brendan Rodgers is. See, if you just, stop bumbling in the background, chunting away. I loved how Frank agreed with himself in that last... Frank said, Brendan Rodgers,
what,
yeah,
if I
agree
with you, I think...
No, you agreed with yourself.
I really think... Go on, Robbo.
He's been a good coach. Brendan Rodgers has been a good coach, but the question was, who's under most pressure? And it's Brendan Rodgers, I would say, at the moment, along with David Moyes.
All right.
I really
like Brendan Rodgers. I really like his personality. But again, he's in danger. But I really hope that he's going to stay because he's a great.
But I really like
him. He's a great coach.
And last question. We talked about this in the show, but let me put it out there again, guys. For all, where do you guys rank Harry Kane all time amongst English greats? Third all time in Premier League goals and has the most international goals for England. Robbo.
Well, when you look at the stats that you showed up in the show in terms of per game, goals per game for England, he's right up there. And he does more than just score goals. You had a couple of players there like Gary Lineker that wasn't interested in any build-up play. He was just an out-and-out goal scorer. He played between the lines of the penalty box. He most of his finishes were tap-ins and short-range shots. Harry Kane scores all sorts of goals. He's good in the air. He'd do his defensive work the other end. He can link up the play. Craig said it in the show. He's got a wide range of passing. He can hit 40, 50-yard passes. He can link up the plays. Clever around the box. He has to be right up there alongside the very best that have played for England.
Don't start. Don't try and butter me up now, Robbo.
I have to. I know you carry some clout, so you're the greatest.
Okay. Harry Kane.
What? What, Harry Kane?
For extra time.
What?
For the question.
This is ended.
Where do you rank him all time again?
Run the credits. I'm not getting any credits.
Go check YouTube. They're talking about Harry Kane there. You'll see a lot more of it, okay? Craig is done now. He's absolutely done. He's not very happy.
Run the credits.
This show was... if there's going to be credits ever again.
Why don't we get credits?
We don't.
Run the credits.
We don't get credits. That's it. We're done. Thank you so much for being with us on the latest edition of Extra Time.
Run that thingy there.
Right. Where's my name?
I should roll the credits.